we'll travel back in time to look at one of the most dangerous disease outbreaks from history. Also, we'll hear how India's mission to get to the moon is going. And we've got a professor from one of the world's best universities on the phone. He's answering one of your questions. So am I. In just a sec, first let's catch up with Technomum with all the secrets of how the world stays connected.
Technomum's Connected World.
I was playing on my computer yesterday and just about to spend my lovely credits when... Mum! I think there's something up with my computer!
Let's take a look. Alright, don't touch anything. It could wipe the memory. Hang on. Your PC has detected a nasty virus. One that's called a Trojan horse.
How did that happen?
Well, viruses are very clever. The horrible hackers who make them know where the weak spots are. Trojan horses disguise themselves to get through virus checking software. But luckily, as we update ours regularly, it's been caught. And now, deleted.
Great, I can get back on Fortnite.
Nope, you're coming shopping with me.
Turns out there was a burst water pipe on the high street. We ended up in a massive jam at the traffic lights as the workers were trying to fix it. These lights are taking forever. Look, there's literally no one on that side of the junction. Why can't they just make the lights go green for us so all these cars can start moving?
That's smart thinking, Tim. They could use information from CCTV cameras and people's sat-navs to automatically change the traffic signals as the road conditions change. It's something that we'll see more of in the future.
Sounds pretty smart.
They're calling them smart cities. It's all about using internet technology and creating connections to make things run more smoothly.
Sounds awesome.
It really is. Because we in technology can use the internet to share data real-time, we can see how people are using things like the road network or even water and electricity, so that people can make sure the supply is in the right place at the right time.
Well, that water isn't in the right place. When the water main burst on our road, we had no drinking water in the taps.
Just think, if the water system used smart technology, maybe they could, I don't know, reroute the flow of water and cut off the flow to this section all by itself, just by passing data around using the cloud.
I guess. I was thinking about that virus on my computer. Even though I was being careful, it nearly lost me all my files. But Mum, more technology means there's more to hack. Never mind deleting all my games on my PC. What if a hacker got into the traffic technology and caused a gridlock? Or decided to turn off the water supply completely? Or cause power cuts or power surges?
Good point, Tim. Smart cities have to be super smart in the way they protect the information and technology that they're using. Safety is something technologists take very seriously. Teams all over the world are working on it.
Let's hope that they have better luck than the crew working on that leak. At least we're in the dry.
Technomum's Connected World, with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology. Find out more at fungoodslive.com/technomum.
Right, let's get to some of the questions that you've sent in through the Apple Podcast Store. If you've got something sciencey that you need answered, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly on there. Go to leave us a review. There's a comment box at the bottom. That's where you leave your question. Also, give us 5 stars and leave your name as well so I know who to say hello to. This one is from Rai Rai Yay, who asks, what's the difference between slugs and snails other than the shells? Today we had a slug expert on the show a few weeks ago, and ever since then, it's like you've been obsessed with slugs and snails. I've had so many questions all about this kind of thing. Rai Rai Yay is the one I'm going for, though. Well, they're both gastropods, Rai Rai, which actually comes from the Greek words for stomach, foot, which is quite fun when you think about what a slug actually looks like. But apart from the shells, the only difference really between a slug and a snail is habitat and behaviour, because slugs don't have shells, they can squeeze themselves into many more places. So they'll often be found under loose bark, in trees, and under stones. You wouldn't find a snail there, which means that sometimes a slug has options of more food available to them because the snail can't reach it. But other than that, pretty much they're exactly the same, but one's got a shell. Also, this is from Otis and his sister Georgia, who are junior conservationists from Surrey in the UK. They say they love small animals, and because of that, they want to know some stuff about scorpions. They want to know what the world's biggest and the world's smallest species of scorpion is. Well, the largest, Otis and Georgia, is generally thought to be either the emperor scorpion or the giant forest scorpion. both pretty big names to go along with their stature. They can both grow up to 9 inches long. They're reddy, they're brown, they're black colours. They live across Africa and Asia. And the smallest is thought to be the Microtitis waringi. I hope I said that right. Microtitis waringi, which it's just 12 millimetres long, this scorpion. And it's found in Cambodia. So if you're ever heading that way, look out. Take a microscope, because you really do need to look around for these small creatures. Thank you so much for the question. It's always nice to know about big and tiny animals. And remember, if you've got something sciencey that you want answered on this show, I can do it all for you. Just leave it as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, you know, if you send me your questions over on Apple Podcasts, if I can't find out the answer properly myself, I'll get an expert to sort it for us. So with that in mind, on the line we have Professor Michelle C. Milinkovic from the University of Geneva. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for joining us. This is a question sent in from Lucy, who's in Birmingham in Great Britain. She asks, how do chameleons change colour?
Wow, that's a difficult question. And of course, this is a question that has been of interest to scientists for many, many years. And we were lucky enough to maybe have understood a part of it. So on the skin of reptiles, including chameleons, you will find many different kinds of cells. Some of them contain pigments that have a specific color, like yellow or black. And these colors come from the fact that when light hits the skin, the pigments will absorb some wavelengths or some colors. And the other colors will bounce back to the eye of the observer. So, for example, if you shine white light, the light of the sun, on a yellow pigment, it is yellow because it's absorbing the blue color. And when you remove the blue color from all the colors of the rainbow, the mix of all the other colors give us the impression of yellow. That's how pigments work.
So we know that chameleons have got, we think that chameleons have got these pigments on their skin.
Yes.
How much decision do they have, do we think, of how to change what these pigments are doing?
Okay, so basically, you have these pigmentary colors, but I forgot to tell you that they also have what we call structural color. It's a little bit more complicated. These are nanostructures. So what it means is that you have little elements. In this case, these are tiny, tiny crystals within cells that will interact with light. They will work a little bit like mirrors, a little bit like prism. It's, again, a little bit complicated to go into the details, but they will generate color, which is not due to absorption of some wavelengths. And these are called structural color. These are bright colors, and they are generated in the skin of many animals, including birds, insects, reptiles, amphibians, etc. So when you look at a chameleon, you're actually looking at two different types of colors. Some of them are pigments, some of them are these structural colors. And now, the chameleon, when it changes color, you know, there is this myth that chameleons can take any color, they can even take any pattern. This is unfortunately not true. There are other animals that can sort of do this, like octopus, for example. But the chameleons basically have only two types of color. They have their relaxed color, so they blend in the environment. They are usually green, for example, and they will be well camouflaged in the foliage. But now, if this is a male chameleon and there is another male chameleon coming in the same tree, he's not going to be happy, and he will try to, you know, make sure the second male is going to leave the tree. So he will try to be as impressive as possible, as visible as possible. And of course, being green is not very conspicuous. So the animal will become, for example, bright yellow. This is a reflex reaction. When the male sees another male, so he sees the pattern of another male, he will automatically switch to this display mode where he tries to be as impressive as possible.
So it's not a case of the chameleons blending into whichever environment they're near. It's they're either a really bright colour or they tend to be green, and they blend in well because usually they live in places with foliage, with trees, that's a lot of green.
That is right. They have a little bit of control on how bright they can be, for example. So, of course, if they are in the sun or if they are in the shade, they can actually control by moving some black pigments. They can make their skin a little bit more dark or a little bit less dark. It means that the animal will be, for example, dark green or bright green to be well camouflaged in the bright foliage or in the foliage in the shade, right? But when it's really changing the color, when it goes from green to yellow, then this is a display. This is really something to make sure that he's keeping his territory or he's trying to attract a female. It's going to be really displaying itself as visible and expressive as possible. And of course, it's dangerous in a sense because that means that predators can see it better as well. So the default state is the camouflage state, and it's only when it needs to display that it will become bright and visible.
The display colors, Michelle, yes. are they individual to every single chameleon, and do they only have one of them, or can a male chameleon one day he wants to be red, the next day he wants to be bright yellow or orange? How does that work?
All right, so that's an interesting question. In fact, you have different types of chameleons, of course, different species, but also within panther chameleons, for example, there are different, these are called morphs, different morphs. Actually, we did a lot of genetics of these animals, and we realized that these morphs were actually probably species, different species. And yes, when we go from one morph or one species to another, you will see differences of color. Some will become very yellow, others will become orange or even red. So this is specific to a group of animals, to a lineage or a species or a morph. A chameleon that become yellow cannot the next day become red, all right? The only thing they can do is restrict their change of color. For example, if they are submissive, so if they see a chameleon much bigger than them and they are in danger of going into an actual fight, they might not display as strongly and leave the tree, you see. But they cannot decide what color they take.
I know you must be busy over there at the University of Geneva, and I think that's it for now, Michelle. Thank you so much for joining us. You've really sorted that out. Have a great day.
Thank you, Dan.
For today's Dangerous Dan, we're taking a look at a disease that has just ravaged humanity for centuries. It's quite a gory tale, this, because particularly we're travelling back through time to take a look at when it was at its worst. The third cholera outbreak is considered the most deadly of the seven cholera pandemics that there have been. It lasted 8 years, from 1852 to 1860. It started in India. Now, cholera is an infection. It's found in unclean water. It makes you have diarrhea. You vomit continuously. And as they found out 200 years ago, it can wipe out generations. Now, the outbreak started in India. And because everyone was drinking this unclean water, it spread right through the Ganges River, through the rest of India, through the rest of Asia, over to Europe, to North America, to Africa. It killed over 1 million people in that time. Now, a British physician called John Snow, who it turned out did know quite a lot actually, was tracking cases of cholera in England at the time, because they had no clue what caused it. Eventually, he found out that it was contaminated water that spread the disease. But sadly, he was too late. The year of his discovery was 1854, which turned out to be the worst year of the pandemic. 23,000 people died in the UK, and that's why it's one of the most deadly diseases humanity has ever seen, and that's why it's going on our Dangerous Dan list. It's time to catch up with Safety Seymour now on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, our superhero friend who's making sure that we're always safe around some really poisonous and dangerous gases.
Safety Seymour, CO Hero.
Safety Seymour at your service. I'm on a mission to recruit CEO safety assistants to help on my quest to rid homes of a very dangerous threat. The threat of CO. That's carbon monoxide.
Can I help? I want to be a CO safety assistant. So what do I need to know?
Well, carbon monoxide is an invisible gas that can make you very ill, Or even worse, let's find out how it affects the body.
Okay, where do we start?
First of all, let's breathe in. All together. When we breathe in, our body takes in oxygen from the air around us. This oxygen is then carried from the lungs in blood cells to all over the body. The blood cells are a bit like teeny tiny delivery drivers. Have a look at your wrists.
I can see blue lines. They're my veins and arteries, right?
Yes, and they act like roads for the blood to travel around the body.
Except without traffic delays.
Indeed. Now, imagine there's carbon monoxide in your home. If you breathe it in, it also travels down to your lungs with the oxygen and gets picked up by the same delivery-driving blood cells who carry it around your body.
So now, as well as delivering oxygen, the blood is also delivering carbon monoxide.
Exactly! And as the poison gas starts to take effect on your body, you'll begin to feel poorly. How many organs can you name in your body?
Well, there's the heart, kidneys, liver, and our brains.
I want you to imagine that you are all of the different organs in the body, and you're starting to be affected by the carbon monoxide. You are going to slowly deflate like a balloon until you feel floppy and dizzy. You will also feel quite sick.
I think I'm going to fall over. I don't like it.
The carbon monoxide is being greedy and taking all the oxygen for itself. It's starving your body of oxygen and making you feel really poorly. It can even cause death. That's how harmful it can be, and that's why we don't want it in our home. Right, let's jump up and shake off all those unhealthy feelings. On your feet and breathe in some good, healthy oxygen.
That's better. I can see why we need a carbon monoxide alarms around our homes now. I mean, if you can't see it, hear it, smell it, taste it or touch it, how else are we going to keep our home safe?
You're an awesome CO safety assistant. And remember, it's important for grown-ups to get gas appliances checked regularly to make sure they're working correctly and the air around your home is nice and fresh. Keep yourself safe and your family out of harm. Get yourself a carbon monoxide alarm. Right, got to go. Anyone can be a CO safety assistant, and getting an alarm is a great place to start. See you soon.
Safety Seymour, CO Hero, with support from Cadent and Northern Gas Networks. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Seymour.
Let's have a look at all the science that has been in your news this week. India's second lunar exploration mission has entered the moon's orbit 1 month after blasting off. Chandrayaan-2 started orbiting the moon on Tuesday. The head of the Indian Space Organization said that he was confident it would land as planned on the 7th of September. And when it's there, it will try and land near the south pole of the moon to explore it, because we've never really looked around there before. Also, plastic bottles have been turned into sockets for prosthetic limbs by experts. An engineer at De Montfort Uni in Leicester in the UK ground down plastic bottles to make polyester yarns, which were then heated and moulded into sockets for fake limbs. And they hope that this will bring down the average cost of producing a socket from £5,000 to just a tenner. And finally, experts are saying people will have to ditch their cars if the UK is to meet its climate change targets. The Science and Technology Select Committee in government says that tech alone can't solve the problem of greenhouse gas emissions. It says that if it wants to improve the state of the planet's health and to be zero carbon by 2050 as they promised, people will simply have to get out of their cars. And that is it for this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, sponsored by Drayton Manor. Remember, if you've got a question that you really want answered on the show, you need to leave it as a review on Apple Podcasts. I will see it, I will either do all the research myself, or I'll get in one of the world's top professors, like we had on the show today, to answer it for you. It's well worth doing if there's something sciencey niggling around your head. Just head over to Apple Podcasts. If that's how you listen to the show, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, leave us a review in the comment box. Make sure there's your name there as well so I know who you are. And if you put 5 stars, that will really help me see it. While you're on Apple Podcasts, it's a brilliant way that you can hear all the science series that we do. You've heard some today. We've got loads more for you to catch up on. You can find it there. It's on the free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids are a children's radio station from the UK. You can find us all around the country on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and as always at funkidslive.com.